Blog Talk Radio.
You didn't know you were loved? You really didn't know what you were loved? Well, I'm here to remind you that you are loved. And by the way, you're loved by none but the Most High, because you're given this precious life, and we're alive because we want to stay alive. And Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachamim, instructions of mercies. This is now the 375th class of Soul Class, the higher inner frequency. And we'll be covering today, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unifying Souls, actually Secular by Design, Part 11. We hope to be reading from Alan W. Cecil's Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances, starting from Part 1, Overview, page 31 as well. We hope to spice up the program with comments coming from time to time, and especially seasoned with your calling in at 347-838-8669. I also pray you make the wise decision to purchase Cecil's work, which is again called Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noahide Laws and Observances. To prepare you for the program today, the following questions may be asked in order to lubricate your blessed mind to go stronger in its attachment to your divine image. Question 1, is there a difference between the Torah of Israel perspective of man's creation and the Christian interpretation? Question number 2, what did the oral Torah tradition of Israel teach concerning how many generations existed before primordial original man? Question number 3, what do Western culture intellectuals by and large ignore? Question number 4, who may have been remembered as much as Galileo, Newton, and Darwin are today if they had been given the chance to freely share their views with the human family experience? Question number 5, what did Richard Dawkins dwell on, which was already known 4 centuries before? Question 6, what is considered non-academic? Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And joining me live, we have the pleasure and the unadulterated merit of having author Alan W. Cecil live on the line to add his commentary and accentuations in parts of the book that perhaps were not written in, but he can add them now. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Thank God, Baruch Hashem. And before we go further, Alan and blessed souls, I just want to mention tomorrow will mark the 4th anniversary since I had signed up to be part of the Blessed Block Talk Radio Network, Blessed Souls. And 4 years later, and over 100,000 listeners via live or archive versions. Again, from the Block Talk Network, then could have been even more listeners due to the various connections which their counter does not pick up on. We just want to make a brief appeal. We wish to expand our efforts to go to the super premium mode of broadcasting via Block Talk Radio, which would give us the option of doing a show on a daily basis, not just in the morning, but sometimes I don't have the time because of my work requirements. I can't do a show in the morning, but if we were able to expand out into the evening broadcast, I think we'd get a wider audience. Also, we'd get more advertising space within the Block Talk Network. If, say, we're someone to type in, they want to do a search on Bible or Torah or seven Noahide commandments or matters of science. We also do programs concerning mental health issues and development of disabilities. And hopefully tomorrow we will be doing a live broadcast with co-host Rabbi, international human rights activist Rabbi Eliezer Goldtek, to celebrate our four-year anniversary. And basically, blessed souls, I'd like to offer up my cell phone number. I'm not ashamed. I'm not afraid to give it out publicly at 347-838-8669 to partner with you and your blessed family to help support our efforts. We need $2,500, and we can discuss how this matter can transpire. Unfortunately, we're still not a tax-free organization, but we feel what is due is our efforts have to increase in order to expand programs like this, Secular by Design. This is a tremendous book, which has been the head of molecular biology, the director of molecular biology studies and research at Queensland University, Professor Ross Barnard, feels this is a wonderful book. I myself, as a Torah askan, a Torah activist, feel this is a book that should be shared. We're sharing it piece by piece until everyone will get access to this book and we can get to the real dialogue of taking seven universal commandments and integrating them into day-to-day secular law in order that people, especially in America, are not bent out of shape by the idea of Torah law, just as ancient England law has been integrated, ancient Christian law has been integrated into American secular law, so too the Noahide commandments can be integrated within a secular fashion, which Alan is the one who pointed out to me. This is a very wise way to do it, and I do agree. And Alan, maybe you'd like to elaborate, give some points of view about why you think we should be expanding our programming and the idea of secularizing the Noahide law. It doesn't take away the godliness from it, but it makes it more approachable for the average beer-drinking Joe.
That's right, Don. And with every donation, you will receive absolutely free a blessing from Dr. Goodman himself. So donate today. Hey, how's that? Is that a good plug?
Well, fast bet. We have to give a Murray Hill number like they did for those commercials for life. I have an Uncle Murray, so he might be besieged. Murray Goodman down in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, he might be besieged by calls. What did my nephew do this time?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the did you ever see Soupy Sales when you were younger?
Sure.
Yeah, do you remember the time when he got in trouble for telling the kids on New Year's, you know, saying that mom and dad were probably asleep from partying, and he told them to go upstairs and look in daddy's wallet and mama's purse for those little green slips of paper with the funny pictures on them and send them to him, and he'll send them a free postcard from Puerto Rico. It's important to get this message out. Education is the key to change, and people have got to be educated about this and what you're doing. You're reaching out to people all over the world, and people need the help.
Thank you for your good word. Alan, let's now go right into the book. What Blessed Souls will be reading right now from Part 1 Overview. Even with the creation of man, this is page 31, the Jewish view is vastly different than the Christian interpretation. The sages of the Talmud taught that there were 974 generations of pre-Adamite man, and the source material Alan brought was from the Talmudic tractate of Sabbath, Shabbat, page 88, and also the Talmudic tractate of Chagiga, which is page 13, the second side. That modern man has been around for 44,731 years. And Alan is using the viewpoint that a generation is 40 years. I'm not aware of that, so I always was on the assumption it was 20 years, but somewhere between 20 and 40 years I can work with, either way. And this is approximately the same time as the appearance of Cro-Magnon Man, when, quote-unquote, human history took off around 50,000 years ago at the time of what I have termed our Great Leap Forward. And there, Alan quoted from Jared Diamond from a book called Guns, Germs, and Steel, which was published in 1999 on page 39 of that book by New York W.W. Norton and Company. Modern Cro-Magnon is quite different from his predecessors, on the family tree. No brow ridges, smaller face, reduced internal nasal cavities, as well as differences in the limb skeleton, a new creation. Now, the intellectuals of our Western culture ignored these rabbinic insights, as they have ignored the teachings of the rabbis to this day. How did these rabbis know these things without quote-unquote science? After all, Sam Harris, Alan continued to write on, can say that, quote, there is no telling what our world would be like had some great kingdom of reason emerged at the time of the Crusades and pacified the credulous multitudes of Europe and the Middle East. And that's Harris's book entitled The End of Faith. Well, I think he was trying to end his faith, but for the rest of us, we still retain our faith. That's page 109. Alan, we talked about this briefly last week. Quite frankly, it is no concern to me how old the creation is, as much as we have to try to educate people how to integrate proper human behavior between human being and creator in terms of avoiding idolatry and self-injurious behavior. Ultimately, it's forbidden for one to commit suicide. And ultimately, social relations, having Noahide or secularized courts which can bring about righteous judgments in order to create a balance and a rebalancing when necessary in society. So again, I asked you this question last week, and I'll ask you again, why is there such an infatuation of man's beginning when there was an age of reason, which basically started with Abraham, who began to reason with human beings? If you're going to be multi-god worshiper, well, you're not going to be able to focus in on that code of law, which at that time was known as the seven universal commandments, the Noahide commandments. And we could have, basically, in my humble opinion, avoided thousands and thousands of bloodshed if human beings way back then had accepted the idea, one true creator with one code of law to make society better. Your take on these matters?
Well, the reason is obvious. There's too many Sam Harrises out there. There's too many Richard Dawkins. These atheists are telling people, oh, the Torah, the Bible is anti-science. No, it's not. It's like I pointed out. I mean, they knew that the Talmud talks about that modern man was created close to 50,000 years ago. And guess what? Surprise! That is also the opinion of scientists today. So, you know, he mentions, you know, gosh, if only there was a kingdom back during the Crusades that was teaching this stuff. Well, there was. It's just that the Europeans at the time were trying to kill them off.
Yeah.
And they weren't listening to them. And they still don't listen to them. That's why we got to get this message out.
Yep. And to add, as I continue to read from Alan's book, but it is also true that had the teachings of the rabbis and sages of the Talmud been disseminated, as had the teachings of the Greek philosophers or later Greek-influenced Renaissance scholars, their names would have been remembered with peers such as Galileo, Newton, and Darwin. Yet these rabbinic scholars remain unknown and heralded by the mainstream academics, and more often than not ridiculed, even when the secular, quote-unquote, intellectual expresses views such as, and we'll read the following view, an intriguing version of the multiverse theory, and I want to stress the idea it's a theory, it's not a fact, it's a theory, arises out of the considerations of the ultimate faith of our universe. Depending upon the values such as Martin Rees' six constants, which I'm not aware of, blessed souls, our universe may be destined to expand infinitely or may stabilize at an equilibrium, or the expansion may reverse. It may reverse itself and go into a contraction, culminating in the so-called quote-unquote big crunch. Maybe we should call it the big Nestle crunch, because that probably has more reality, more backing to it than this big crunch that he's talking about. Some big crunch models have the universe then bouncing back into expansion and so on indefinitely, with, say, a 20 billion year cycle time. If bang, expansion, contraction, crunch cycles have been going on forever, like a cosmic accordion, we have a serial rather than a parallel, a version of the multiverse. Of all the universes in the series, only a minority have their quote-unquote dials tuned to biogenic conditions. And of course, the present has to be one of that minority, because we are in it. As it turns out, this serial version of the multiverse must now be judged less likely than it once was, because recent evidence is starting to steer us away from the big crunch model. It now looks as our own universe is destined to expand forever. And that's a quote from none other than Richard Dawkins. And if it wasn't during the 9 days, we're in a partial state of mourning. I'm thinking, Alan, before you make your comment, before we quote Professor Dawkins, because you quote him so much in the book, I'd like to play segue as a preface the opening theme song to Monty Python. I think that would be quite appropriate.
Perfect.
So your comments on this, I just want to mention that, yes, there should have been added along the names of Galileo, Newton, and Darwin, individuals such as, by the way, Rashi, my landlord, from whom I rent my apartment, Baruch Zabel, told me there is an institute in the city where Rashi lived over 900 years ago where they actually study his elucidations on the wisdoms of old French. And you can go today and enroll in a school in France and study the elucidations of Rashi. And you don't have to be Jewish, and it's not Torah teachings. He was a linguist and a specialist in old French. And also we have, of course, Rabbi Raphael Shamshon Hirsch from the 19th century. And thank you, Alan, for your heroic efforts to trying to bring the teachings and sagacity of Rabbi Hirsch to the forefront. Unfortunately, most people, when they think of Jewish teachers, they only think about Moses and David and Solomon.
And the other Moses. Moses and the other Moses, Rambam.
Yeah, I know. So there are certainly, and we forgot to mention that Ramban still hasn't really made his entrance into the hallway of intellectual endeavors, because he wrote about tempering the anger of a human being. So, Alan, what do you think it's going to take, aside from our dialogue, to really open up the floodgates that the modern, quote-unquote, intellectual, even the, six-pack Joe, as you once mentioned a couple weeks ago, can access these teachings and realize they're just as elusive, they're just as enlightening as the teachings of Galileo, Newton, and Darwin?
Well, that's the thing is that you've got six-pack Joe, and then you've got, nuclear scientist Joe. Then you have Shakespeare Joe. People are so different, and there's not just one approach. The thing is, the Torah has something to offer for everybody. It's not just for the religious. It's also, as we're talking about here, for the scientific, for the academic. There's so much in there that they don't know about, and that's what we have to use to get these people into it.
Yeah, and I want to mention there's also various insights into the nature of, say, relationships between a husband and wife, not just between a Jewish man and a Jewish wife, but for a gentleman and a gentle wife, how to carry about proper relations before they marry, during the marriage, and how to impart a proper education to their children, that it's embedded with them healthy fundamental principles that will guide their children throughout their life. And there is the component as well, which is embedded in many teachings, especially in the oral Torah traditions, about the psyche of a human being or the psychology of a human being. So these matters, in fact, many of those teachings actually filtered through in a very covert manner through the teachings of Sigmund Freud, who in fact possessed quite a possession of Hebrew books. But unfortunately, in 19th and early 20th century Germany, pre and beginning of the Nazi regime, that he passed along many of his teachings to one of his young students, Carl Jung, who I believe was the son of a Christian pastor, and Freud felt that better that the teaching go out, which he felt a passion for spreading into the mass consciousness of human beings, through a Christian, the son of a Christian pastor, because of the anti-Semitism, he felt that he would been going against the tide too openly in that.
And Jung was, culture. If I could interject, Jung was heavily into Gnosticism.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, Freud, I don't know, I don't recall learning that he was I think his father, his grandfather was a rabbi in Germany. As far as he was not a practicing, observant Jew. And I don't know. I don't even recall what his feelings were about his understanding of the Creator. I'm just not sure about that.
Well, he wrote. I think he wrote a book on Deuteronomy.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, but it's from a Western secular academic standpoint. He was an assimilated Jew, brainwashed like so many others at that time. Cool. But you know, it's interesting. How come, you know, when you look at the Nobel Prizes in the last 100 years, Nobel Prizes in science, physics, mathematics, what is it, a third of them are Jewish?
It's amazing.
The percentage of Jews in these fields of science and academics is astounding. And the reason for that is that the Torah is not anti-science. It prepares people for this stuff.
That's right. Rambam was certainly one who was, at the time, of course, he didn't have laboratories and he didn't have the modern technology, but he definitely had treatises which were begging for future scientists to go deeper into the matter, and even he acknowledged that he was limited in terms of what he had access to at those times, and he definitely encouraged scientific endeavor. I'd like to read one final piece for today's program because we are coming to the end. Going back to Dawkins, and again, in Picture in Your Mind, Blessed Souls of Your Ears, hearing the introduction to Monty Python's theme song. Dawkins dwells on the multiverse theory, yet he seems blissfully unaware that this same idea was put forth centuries before by Rabbi Chisdai Kreskes. Why is the Torah viewed as non-academic, or that the followers of the Torah, both Jews and Noahides, presented as basing their religion on faith in myths and fairy tales? Fairy tales can take on many different forms, and the definition of faith often depends on your point of view. The secular atheists want you to believe that the universe, or all the hundreds of billions and galaxies made up of hundreds of trillions of stars, came into being in a certain spot in space and time for no reason whatsoever. It is by the faith that you must believe in the Big Bang Theory, and Alan brought down a very potent footnote here in the middle of that statement where I'll just read the part of the overview that he wrote and then segue that into the quote by Rabbi Soloveitchik. Came into being in a certain spot in space and time for no reason whatsoever. And then Alan segued to a quote from Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik. The secular concept of the Big Bang itself is a violation of the law of causality. As Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote, causality, and creation are two irreconcilable antagonists, which he wrote in his wonderful work, Halachic Man, which was published in 1991. The atheist and the agnostic scientists have invented myriads of theories to explain this little problem of the causation of the universe, such as, quote-unquote, vacillating universe theory, that the gravitational pull of the galaxies will eventually slow down their expansion and cause them to finally coalesce into a single mass, thereby causing a tremendous explosion, another Big Bang, if you will. Almost sounds like an opening segue to one of George Carlin's monologues. The problem with this theory is that the universe is expanding at an ever-increasing rate, and according to recent scientific study, we're even pulling out science, the rabbi is, there is not nearly enough matter in the universe for the gravitational pull needed for this to happen, which means that the creation of the universe was a one-time event. Of course, the atheist answered that there is indeed enough matter in the universe It is simply is invisible and undetected. Well, they must have a lot of faith. And you simply have to believe in the existence of this invisible faith, excuse me, invisible matter by faith. Or maybe that Freudian slip I made, that invisible faith, that there is visible, tangible matter, at least as exists in their imagination. These and many more scientific theories supported by empirical evidence, such as theories about what came about before the Big Bang, are based on the pulling theories out of your, and Alan wrote it, not me, blessed souls, pulling theories out of your Tokos principle. Well, Alan, like you said to me many times after the program that we've done, which we're coming to the end of this one, we certainly are qualifying for auditioning on vaudeville with some of the ways we are able to bring about commentary, whether it be segueing into Richard Dawkins with Monty Python's theme song or as you just wrote now. But can you please give some commentary on what we just talked about, that this infatuation with the Big Bang Theory based on a faith, the very type of quality of faith that the atheists and the secular scientists would say we of the faith-based and law-abiding Torah communities, whether Jew or Gentile, are guilty of?
Well, they sit there, yeah, they criticize us for, oh, you believe in this old book about creation, and yet they seem to follow the works closer to J.K. Rowling, Harry Potter, How Did the Universe Form? Magic! Boing! There it was. And it doesn't make any sense. I mean, when you really, I mean, even the scientists really can't explain why the universe came into being.
Right. I sometimes enjoy hearing sometimes they talk about the stuff that the world was made of. What do you mean, what stuff? Maybe it was God's word, and maybe you just can't quantify what God's word is, so you've come up with a string theory, which, hey, let the string theory be pursued, the super string theory, let it be pursued and learned out, and let them do their experiments. Because,
well, they change it so many times. There was a great article in the news just the other day. There had been this big advance in the theory of dark matter. They said that, oh, we've detected dark matter, and then an article came out and said, oops, our bad, we miscalculated. No, there's not. Again, they switch. I mean, they change their theories every other week.
Uh-huh. That being said, Alan, thank you very much for your valuable time that you've shared with us over the past almost 30 minutes. Would you like to make any concluding statements concerning today's show? Maybe, the only dark matter I like to deal with is like the dark matter of some organic chocolate. But anyway.
That sounds good to me. Yeah, and One more final plug. We've got to get this show out to more people, so give Don a hand. Two of them, if you can spare them.
And that you can do that by contacting me, Blessed Souls, at 347-469-9702. 347-469-9702. Please remember, Blessed Souls, tomorrow 9:30 Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, a.k.a. the USA, Unifying Souls. Actually, we hope to have a live interview with international human rights activist Rabbi Eliezer Goldsack, director of Heart to Heart, an organization dedicated to uplifting the lives of unique human beings, what the world calls special needs children and adults, and their families. Really, that organization is how to deal with us, quote-unquote, normal people. Anyway, we're going to end right now, Blessed Souls, hopefully in a way of Ahav Achad, one love, Gor Achad, one destiny, Kulan, Badarach, Noam, Adachi, Shalom, in a pleasant way, in a peaceful way, by listening to Yosef Kaderner's Shir Mals, Psalms 121, which I'm going to read the words because he sings it in Hebrew, a song for a sense. I shall raise my eyes to the mountains. From where will my help come? My help is from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not allow your foot to falter. Your guardian will not slumber. Behold, the guardian of Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your guardian. The Lord is your shadow. He is by your right hand. By day the sun will not smite you, nor the moon at night. The Creator will guard you from all evil. He will guard your soul. The Creator will guard your going out and your coming in from now into eternity, right now. Alitem la moto.
השם ישמור אותך ובוא